See what Carmen and Yurko are talking about on Twitch.
Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
This is Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
All right, thank you, Danny Zetterman. Thank you, Jeff Meller. JR had the day off. Hoodie and I back 7 a.m. tomorrow. Crosstalk brought to you by the Hawthorne Racecourse. 1,000-pound Thoroughbred athletes are back at Hawthorne, Chicago's hometown track. Download the Club Hawthorne app like Carm does. I do. To watch and wager from anywhere. Details at HawthorneRacecourse.com.
Leaders' Cup, couple weeks.
There you go.
Yeah.
And thank you also to Dan Wiederer. That leads us to?
To Carmen and Yurko.
Can't you see them? They're right here.
Yeah, they're both. Can't you see them? They're right here.
Guys,
welcome.
Well, it's good
Thank
to
you.
Be here.
Thank you. It's good to be here. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so it's great. So, World Series yesterday. Carm and Yurko.
There it is.
There's a curveball and for a strike.
How about that World Series?
So I'm not going to apologize for my thoughts on Kershaw.
No,
but I mean, that was stellar for game one. That's what you wanted, right?
It was great.
It was good.
I love Kershaw, and I've always talked him up, loved him. I mean, he's this generation's Sandy Koufax. I mean, he's the best pitcher of the last 20 years. You know, I mean, he's great. But there's been problems. Let's face it. And somebody late in the day yesterday on Twitter was asking, what's the gambling play? Jesse and Rogers and I were texting about it, too, and I said, as much as I love Kershaw, it's tough to lay over $1.70 in spots like that. And I told the guy on Twitter, I said, if you really like the Dodgers, bet him on the run line. You'll get plus 130. I hope he did it.
It dropped down to, 154 before game time?
Yeah, I think it did come down a little bit. But you got about plus 130 on the run line, and they won by more than a run. So, winner, chicken dinner. I don't think you apologize at all.
I had Tampa first five innings plus a half a run.
Oh, God.
And he gave up the two-run home run. Otherwise, that's a cashable ticket.
So are you pulling Glass now earlier than the 4 1/3? I mean, 112 pitches.
Well, after the second.
How do you do it?
What do you pull him after the first walk? I mean, do you pull him before that inning even starts so he's not going a third time through? Good question. He's one of their dominant guys. I mean.
Struggled, though.
I know. The walks. The walks were the issue. I mean, stuff was good. He had a lot of swing and miss, but the walks are bad.
Yeah,
you start walking that lineup, you're in trouble.
I understand they were playing the long game, like, okay, 112 pitches for Glass now, but it's kind of like everything was a struggle.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because of my White Sox eyes. I'm just used to getting pitchers being pulled earlier.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why.
Well, you got a guy like Jimmy Cordero. You can run out there every day.
That's it. I don't think Wills and the Rays have that, though.
Every single day.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. So I was wondering about that aspect of it for Tampa.
I wondered if they thought about lifting him before that inning even started. Would it have been different? Maybe not. The Dodgers lineup is just a nightmare, boys. I mean, it is. It's just a monster.
They're going to finally break through for the first time since 88.
I think they might. And now they've got their really hard throwers coming up, too, which has sort of been the only real kryptonite for that Tampa offense all year. Tampa's offense did not do well in the regular season or in the postseason against velocity. Kershaw started yesterday. He's never been a big velo guy anyway, and he certainly isn't now. Now you're locked and loaded with their guys that do throw hard. I mean, May's going to be coming with 100, and Buehler's going to be coming with 97, and even Gonsolin throws over 95.
I'm just amazed by even the Sox bullpen. The Cubs don't have it. Guys, that everyone's coming in throwing 99.
Everybody. I mean, it's a joke. I shouldn't say it's a joke. It's mind-boggling in baseball what's happened. And how many arms now these days, how many arms are on each staff that can easily throw 97 miles?
Yes. Oh, it's unbelievable.
Easily. It's unbelievable. I mean, it used to be a rarity to see that. When a guy hit 99, it was like, are you kidding me? And now you got a guy on every staff, if not more. You got two on every staff that can throw 99.
Agreed.
It's incredible.
Agreed.
And so now if you're a Tampa, that you get into a tough spot because their big velo guys are coming and they need to win tonight, I would think. Try to get the Gonsolin if they want to make this much of a series. But I'm pulling for Tampa. I am. They're the underdog.
Have you met my friend? We call him Franklin now on the show here.
What's up, Franklin?
He never ceases to amaze
What did
man.
I do? What did I do today? I black out between 7 and 10. I don't know what I say.
He's in. That's how much of the zone he's in. He's like, It's an out-of-body experience. He's so locked in. He's so zoned in.
We were talking about how Charlie Brown show is the Great Pumpkin is not going to be on Apple TV and not on network TV anymore. Did you read that story?
Why?
That's going to be on CBS anymore. They moved it to Apple TV.
So they're moving it off of network
TV? You can
for the first time
it.
Since like 65.
Yeah.
How brutal is that?
Yeah, that's kind of brutal, right? But not everybody has Apple TV. Not everybody has cable, right?
What's wrong with having it on? I think it was on 2 for a while, then it was on ABC for a while.
Long time.
I find that sad.
What about the Christmas special? Same thing? That's sad.
Yeah, I find that sad.
Because everything's streamed.
Well, nothing better than the Great Pumpkin, man.
Did you grow up with a Chuck Brown?
I did. Charlie Brown, big fan. You know, Snoopy's Christmas. Snoopy's Christmas.
Oh, God, yeah.
So Hoodie said that when we would have the holiday party at Chicago Cut, Franklin over here would have to be left back at the station and forced to work while the rest of us were indulging.
Franklin, I love it. While the rest of us were dining on steak and getting liquored up.
You do know that, right?
Yeah.
The only way he got a steak was George Katsourilos would grab a leftover and bring it back to him.
George, first of all, I haven't heard George's name in a while.
You do remember nights, don't you?
I remember. Okay. Believe me. You're right, Hoodie. I think that happened to us a couple of times back in the day when like there was a Ditka's holiday party.
Oh, yeah.
Like, no, you guys have to work.
Yeah. No,
sorry.
No, stay back here and do the Bulls Hornets post.
I think we showed up afterwards. Yeah, Bulls Hornets post. Absolutely.
It's like,
it's time to get everybody's liquored up.
And I said in the Delavitt administration, I was. You know, when we talk about parties, I was Franklin.
There it is, Franklin.
Look at Carp.
All by himself.
Look at everybody else. Look at it. You got a Carm and Yurko.
Twitch.
Look at you, Yurk. There you are.
Put it on Twitch.
You got a Carm. You got a Yurko. You got a Waddle Sylvie. You got a Cap, right? And there's...
give him one of the lawn chairs.
And there's Chauncey at the head of the table. And then there's me. You see me there?
I see you there, yeah.
Yeah, I see you on the lawn chair.
I got you.
Yeah.
I got you right there on the lawn
Everyone
chair.
Everyone else has got a nice dining chair.
He's a late inclusion. No, then there's a folding chair on the back end here. I don't know who's got the brown peppermint patty.
I think that's Marcy.
Patty.
Is that Marcy?
Yeah. I think it might be Marcy.
The dog got a better chair.
Right, I mean, really, and poor Franklin.
Snoopy's
he's on an island.
Snoopy's number two.
I'm going to put this in my home, and I'm going to title it Delvin Era.
Put that You've heard of The Last Supper? Put that up. This is The Last Supper right
Charlie
here.
Brown was the number one star. Snoopy was number two.
Snoopy
was number two. Second dog.
Right, right next to God and MLK.
That's
I'm going to put that.
Supper,
put this right here.
Put it right there.
Right in the middle.
That's it.
Right.
The only thing you really missed, of course, well, I mean, the great food, but also Yurko's benediction had become something of
the prayer.
Yeah, I mean, it was really something everybody looked forward to.
I'm here for you guys.
Yurko blessing the meal.
Won't happen this year.
No, I don't think it's happening.
And then Greg Morin.
Well, Greg Morin, give me a break. I mean, one of our sales guys. Nobody needs to hear Greg Morin talk. We just wanted to hear Yurko do the benediction. That's all we wanted.
Yurko's benediction was amazing.
The best.
Leave him alone. Morin.
Yeah, let's not pick on Morin. That poor guy, he's an LSU fan.
Yeah, well, he went there, so.
I love Morin.
At least he went there.
You're the one that does.
Oh!
You and his family.
Leave Morin alone, for God's sakes. So the Miami Dolphins, I want to ask you about this.
Yeah, the Dolphins.
You're in that Dolphins locker room.
Tua Tagovailoa.
Close.
Tua Tagovailoa.
That's Isaiah.
Is now the quarterback there. So you're in that locker room, and you're like, you know, we're doing well, guys. So why the switch? Fitzmagic's doing fine. Why do you feel?
Something's got to be happening in practice where they think they can become a little more dynamic.
That's what I'm
They're feeling they could be more dynamic, maybe a little more multidimensional. Maybe they need to introduce something more. They could be a little bit better.
You're scratching your head in the locker room, though?
If I'm Fitzpatrick, I knew eventually this was going to happen. He's no fool. So eventually it's going to happen. And the way he handles it will kind of let you know how it's going to work out for the rest of these guys.
Kurt Warner said the same thing happened to him in New York with Eli.
You're not in the business, though, of having time and patience with him, especially since you're on a little bit of a streak. So this needs to work. This needs to happen. Everybody needs to pick everything up and, you know, everybody be cognizant that it might not be perfect, but we better find ways to win games.
They're a game out of first, right? I mean, for the veterans.
They're 3-3 and the leaders are 4-2.
Yeah, they're a game out of first. The veterans are thinking it better where you can do it, but now he better play well.
You just don't get the cord cut early. Like, we know what's going to happen. If you continue on with Fitzpatrick, you know what's going to happen, right? But you don't get the cord cut so early. You're like, we know that you're not any good, so we're going with Tua now. before you went to bed?
Well, Mike Glennon was here for, 4 weeks before they put Mitch Trubisky in?
Yeah.
Right? So it was the fourth week. Tim Couch waited all of 1 week. We got massacred by the Pittsburgh Steelers on a Sunday night. Mm-hmm. And the next thing you knew, it was the Tim Couch era.
Yeah.
And, oh, boy.
That didn't go.
You knew right away you were going to have problems on a very talentless team, and I was a part of that team. Yeah.
Look, Mitch got benched on a team that had a winning record.
But it always happens. I mean, you got that young buck sitting in the background. It's just a matter of time before they want to put him in the game to see what's going on. The only people that have shown extreme patience with anyone was Aaron Rodgers.
And what's the stat? There's a stat about the first round quarterbacks, right? Going back to like 2000. I mean, it's like 97% of them play in their rookie year. It's incredible. Your Yorker's right. They just don't take the approach, and they haven't for many years. Well, we're going to let him sit and wait. Rodgers, the exception of the rule.
Mahomes didn't play as a rookie either.
Mahomes played. That's true. Mahomes played late. He played the last game of the year when it didn't matter in Week 17. He started Week 17 his rookie year. The numbers are incredible. And you draft a quarterback in the first round, that guy, I don't know the exact stat. Kuiper spouts it all the time. I'm sure we could find it easy enough. But that statistic is so incredibly high. These teams get a first-round quarterback, and they're playing him as a rookie. That's it. At some point, they play.
It's interesting. If they started with Tua at the beginning, maybe you're so bad that you get Waddle. In the
Jalen
draft.
Waddle, he'd love that, huh?
I'm just saying, like, because now you're just
Tommy's
good enough.
Kid is a beast.
Man. You're just good enough to be in the middle of the draft now, or in the top 10 in the draft, right?
Yeah, they're not.
The Dolphins.
I mean, I don't think they're. I think the Dolphins think like they can compete. I mean, there's.
Yeah, I think they think the
Patriots aren't
grabs.
As invincible as they once were.
Well,
the Bills have some flaws. The
They've
Jets
got some
are
warts.
The Jets.
They actually though, I think don't they actually have the Texans first round pick
from Tunsil? They might.
And,
that could be right.
And they're two.
Yeah, that could be right.
So like, and second.
They don't need to be bad. The Texans are taking care of that for them.
Yeah, the Texans
right
are doing it for them. They'll still be able to draft Jalen Waddle. The Tua will really be happy.
What happens if somehow, someway, the Texans got the number one overall pick?
They would trade it, wouldn't they?
Yes, they would.
They would pass up Trevor Lawrence.
Yes.
Yes.
Why wouldn't you? You just drafted Tua.
Yeah. I mean, trade Tua. Trevor Lawrence
maybe,
is better
maybe,
than Tua.
Maybe the season dictates that. Like if Tua really struggles, but I mean, really, you're going to move off of Tua already after 1 year?
You've got to look at picks too. You've got to see who's got multiple picks in this year's first round. That's the first thing I'd take a look at. Like Oakland last year had all those draft choices. You'd have to find somebody that's got multiple draft choices this year.
Unless Tua is absolutely amazing.
Oh, amazing.
I would say amazing.
Okay, amazing.
If the Texans had the worst record in the league and the Dolphins had the first overall pick, everyone's saying Trevor Lawrence is the best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck.
Andrew Luck, yeah.
So I think you trade Tua. You'd hold an auction and see who wants Tua.
Agreed.
Wow.
Unless he was like, oh my goodness.
Well, this season might dictate it. Like he could go out and play great. If he really struggles, maybe they do. I don't know. That's an interesting development.
Yeah, I'm a huge Trevor Lawrence fan. I want the Bears to do whatever it takes. Yeah,
whatever it takes. What could they do?
Bears.
I mean, what are they going to do?
Here's my whole draft. I'll take
it. No, that never works.
No.
It never works.
No.
It just doesn't.
No. You're not going
to pass the Vikings.
You're not getting past like the Jets and Giants and Falcons.
I don't think the Jets would do it.
They might not.
Why not? I don't think Captain America is very good.
Well, in the end, they're getting your number one pick, which is going to be, in the 20s probably.
Yeah.
They're getting your second round pick, which is later. And then a bunch of 3, 4, 5, 6.
Could the Bears really be like, are the Bears with that offensive line and all their problems really in a position to be like, I'll give you my whole draft or I'll give you multiple number ones? I don't think so.
I love the kid,
and knowing
too.
The Bears, they'd screw the whole damn thing up anyway.
Cap, but he's not going to be
Trevor
a Bear.
Lawrence. Yeah, I can't see it.
Cap, people want to know why you look like Little Red Riding Hood right now. And
the big bad wolf is coming.
Yeah.
Didn't I tell them?
No.
Then I guess it doesn't concern them.
You're on a need-to-know basis, Twitch.
Yeah.
You don't need to know.
And you don't need to know. Take that.
Take that.
All right, we're out of here. Back tomorrow at 7 a.m. Carmen and Yurko are next. So you have a great day, kid.
Thank you very much.
All right, see you tomorrow. Take that.
Always.
It's Carmen and Yurko. Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN _Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
hump day already, Yerk. And the Bears are getting at it as they prepare for the Los Angeles Rams in primetime on Monday night. That's your Week 7 matchup. Talk about that game a lot today and the rest of the week. Plus, the World Series is underway. Dan Schulman will join us coming up in about 45 minutes or so to recap Game 1. Look ahead at Game 2 tonight. Mookie Betts, Clayton Kershaw steal the show last night. And it'd be fair to question Clayton Kershaw and his ability to dominate going into that game, knowing some of his postseason failings. Some of it may be a little bit, I think the narrative has been a little bit unfair sometimes directed at Clayton Kershaw. But I myself was saying, that's a pretty big steep price delay. Hard to trust Clayton Kershaw in these spots, but he went out after a rocky first inning and completely dominated last night. It was vintage Kershaw.
And good for the Dodgers. And any time that it looked like Tampa was even starting to get something started, something bad happened to him and it was over.
Man, Mookie Betts is good, isn't he? Yeah. And I know Joe Buck had joked at one point, but what are Boston fans thinking? Now, Boston got a World Series with Mookie Betts. I think Boston fans are probably pretty hot and bothered. If they go out and they spend all the money they saved on other big-time players and they get back into the playoffs and back into World Series contention at some point soon, maybe they forget about it. But it would be hard to watch a player that age that you drafted and developed, right?
Mm-hmm.
To just watch him perform on this stage across the country for a different team, it would be awfully hard.
Mm-hmm. Did Theo draft Mookie?
Yes, he did. Theo Epstein drafted Mookie Betts in Boston. He absolutely did.
I think you know what that feels like. I have a feeling you know what it feels like. But not quite on that stage, but anytime you're looking up statistics and you see a former Chicago White Sox property or a player that used to play for the Chicago White Sox, and you see what he's doing, I think you've got a very good feeling of what Boston feels
like. But would this be even worse? Like, as bad as it is, and the Fernando Tatis Jr. trade is, listen to me, okay? It's going to go down as the worst trade in the
Major League Baseball history.
In the last 50 years in baseball. I mean, it's not even funny. I mean, it is. What's the, John Smoltz for Doyle Alexander, maybe? I don't know. There are a couple. Brock for Broglio, I mean.
Jake Arrieta? Won a Cy Young, won a World Series.
Yeah, Arrieta didn't really have a long, sustained run of dominance, though. As great as he was
two
for the Cubs,
Merck, that was it for him.
And that was an unbelievable trade. Like
the Red Sox traded away Jeff Bagwell for Larry Anderson, I believe.
That's true.
That's
a Hall of Fame career. Like, I think this trade is going to go down as probably the worst in baseball in the last 50 years. But maybe in a slight defense of the White Sox and why it's not the same as Mookie Betts, the kid was like 17 when they traded him. I mean, he was in fall ball. I mean,
he was youthful.
Shame on them. Don't get me wrong. Shame on them. And what caused it was the ridiculous idea that they always used to have. Well, we're in it every year. We're going to go for it now. And let's get an old, decrepit James Shields who just gave up 19 earned runs in his last two starts. That's going to be the answer for us in the second half. Like, the logic is so flawed and was so flawed back in those days by the White Sox that it makes you sick. But Tatis was 17, I think, when they traded him. This guy was an MVP. This guy is a World Series hero already. This guy clearly has been the second best player in baseball since 2015 when he broke into the league behind Mike Trout.
He was traded. At least they got something for him then.
He was traded, yeah. They got Verdugo. They got Jeter Downs, and they unloaded David Price's money. They basically did it so they wouldn't have to pay him.
Right.
They unloaded David Price's money, and they got a couple of decent prospects, I guess you'd say, in return. So, yeah, they got something, but, like, I don't even know. I think it's even more painful for Red Sox fans maybe to watch it right now, as much as it sucks for White Sox fans to watch Tatis. We were just talking about Tatis yesterday because it's for some reason some StatCast data had come up, and we were looking on the 2020 StatCast page. Not only did Fernando Tatis Jr. lead the league in average exit velo, mm-hmm. he also led the league in barrel percentage.
Barrel percentage. By the way, shots last night, too, of the ball getting barreled up. Is there showing no slow-mo shots coming in? Oh, that one's off the barrel. But they missed that one. They were shellacking them.
Oh, man.
Yeah, last night.
They were hitting. They were, especially when they got into the Rays bullpen. I mean, they were hitting everything hard, guys. The Cody Bellinger home run is like the all-encompassing StatCast era home run. 36 degrees of launch angle. 36 degrees of launch angle and an exit velo of 108 miles an hour. Like, what? That is everything that encompasses
home runs.
Right or wrong. Like, how, if you hate the way it's played, if you hate all the data, what, like, right or wrong, however you feel about it, it is everything that is baseball today. That swing, that long angel, launch angle. Thank you, and the angel, Yurko. That exit velocity, like Waddle's, you know, pulling his hair out right now. He can't believe it. But, like, all of that stuff is everything that is, like the home run that they're looking for in today's age. That was it. That was Cody Bellinger's home run. The Dodgers, it does look like it might be their time after being in that big hole. I mean, we're here on Friday of last week talking about, gee, it just goes to show how hard it is. You know, the Dodgers look like they're dead. They're down 3-1.
Tampa will not disappear.
I don't think they'll disappear.
They're not going to disappear, boys.
But maybe it's like the Dodgers are riding that big mo. However you quantify that, and it's almost impossible to quantify, it kind of feels like it might finally be their turn with that lineup and their pitching and all the big mo that they are riding right now and the defense that they're playing. They turned another double play where maybe it put a little bit of, I don't know how much of that is in Brasseau when they picked him off set, when they doubled him off set.
Oh, that was quick.
That was awfully quick, man. I mean,
Not only that, but the ball is behind him at that point. You know what I'm saying? As he's off of second.
Yeah.
And you can see his reaction as the ball leaves the bat.
That ball's not in front of him.
He doesn't move, but he's, okay, I'm moving in my brain. And then he took two steps and it was over.
I think you're right, Eric.
It was over.
It's one thing when a guy on second makes a mistake of running or advancing where the ball's in front of him. That ball wasn't in front of him. You know, I think it was just dead to rights. That ball came off the bat so fast. I can't remember which relief pitcher was on the mound at that point.
Gonzalez, I think?
Yeah. It was Victor Gonzalez. Yeah. Gonzalez snagged it, turned around. They had him, inning over. Like, any little threat they were mounting, over. I mean, the Dodgers have done that repeatedly since they were staring down elimination last Friday. We played the montage yesterday, the great montage of Mookie Betts over the weekend. Not one, not two, but three incredible defensive plays in right field. They caught, who was it? They had another impressive double play on, I think it was in game 7 on Sunday, where they caught a guy trying to come home with the infield
That was terrible base running.
Yeah, it was bad base running. They had the infield in, and I think it was Dansby Swanson, right?
Second, third, nobody out. Nick Markakis up. It hits a grounder to the left side.
And I think Swanson tried to come home, and they threw him like they've had. So some of it is just bad base running, I guess. You're right, Merck, but the defense has been on their toes. And it's starting to kind of feel like it might be the Dodgers' time. But, it would suck to watch your team develop a player like Mookie Betts and then have to say goodbye to him. And I guess you wouldn't expect it to happen in a market like Boston. Like, if it ever happened with a Cubs player or with a White Sox player or with a Yankee player, it just, you get it when it's the A's. You get it when it's Tampa. You understand it. They don't have the money. They don't have the means to pay players like that. The Boston Red Sox certainly, is that me or you?
I don't know.
The Boston Red Sox certainly could have paid, as much as all these teams like to cry poor, they certainly could have paid Mookie Betts. And I think that's what's got to be frustrating. If you are in a big market, if you're in a big town, and you see your team do what is so hard to do, draft and develop a young superstar, and you just say, we can't afford you, we don't want to, we're going to let you go. It's got to be a little bit of a kick in the teeth. 312-332-3776. That's the number.
You know where Brasseau's from, right?
Mike Brasseau is a Chicago kid or a region kid? Is he from the region?
Munster, Indiana.
Munster, that's
where
right.
He was born. He attended Andrean High School.
He's an Andrean kid.
Yeah.
Boy, he and Len Metella. A lot of good athletes.
59er.
Wow.
That's their nickname over there.
The 59ers?
Andrean 59ers.
Because they started in 1959? What is
that? No, they're just 10 less than what they wanted to be. Rob Gronkowski.
They're 10 less than Gronk?
Yeah. 10 less than Gronk.
Some good athletes from the region.
Yeah, they got some players, you know.
Can you talk about the conversation you had with a high-profile baseball person from the region?
I cannot.
Okay.
I'm glad I asked. I was sworn to secrecy on that one.
Done and done. Sorry to tease everybody. Ask Yurko about it at the bar next time you see him.
Well, yeah, next time you see me at the bar, I can talk about it, but I can't
Because it's a good conversation.
Right. I think it's a solid baseball conversation.
But he's working in baseball. I get it.
And he's working in baseball. And so the contents of that said conversation shall remain private.
Gotcha. I'm glad I didn't spout it out. I wanted to ask for it.
I am glad, too. But I did run into, he's a Northwest Indiana guy too now, John Maley.
Yes.
The former Cubs batting coach.
That's what I was talking about.
Yeah. That's fine. No, that conversation will remain private.
Okay.
But it's basically.
But you don't mind saying it was with John
Maley? Basically, yeah, I don't mind. He's back in the region. Everybody knows he's back in the region. All his buddies, all his guys, he's out and about, you know, that kind of thing. But it's just, you know, one of my theories that I've espoused to you over the course of time.
Yes.
And about contextualizing statistics. You got to use your statistics to go along with what you see.
Yeah.
It's a combination of it all, and I've always said it's a combination of it all. And that, in essence, is the crux.
Yeah.
But we will not get into the specifics.
Hit us up on Twitter, at Carmen DeFalco, at Yurko64. That's Yurko with the J and the number 64. Ring us up at 312-332-3776. Coming up next, Aaron Donald is coming for Nick Foles. Uh-oh. We'll be right back.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
You miss something, the podcast is out there. The all-new ESPN Chicago app is here. Get it now. Get it in the App Store and Google Play.
Third straight year the Bears will play the Rams, Yurko. Remember a couple years ago, you documented this game yesterday or earlier in the week. You were there 2 years ago, yep. That dominant 2018 defense on that cold night at Soldier Field when the Bears, Mitchell Trubisky and the offense stunk, but the Bears defense and Vic Fangio, I mean, they put a whooping on Sean McVay and Jared Goff like we haven't seen,
Todd,
right?
Todd Gurley didn't want to run the ball. He didn't want to be there. The receivers didn't want to be there.
Then last year, the Bears went out there, and Mitch was benched for the last, 5 minutes of the game or so. Remember that?
Yes.
And it looked like he had to be consoled by Matt Nagy on the sidelines, mm-hmm. and that whole thing happened, and the Rams even the score.
Can he, you know what he said that day? Can you buy me a brand new bike? Can you buy me a new bike?
Now this year, the Bears go out there again. It'll happen in Week 7. It'll be Monday Night Football. Money in Vegas is coming on the Bears, driving that price down a little bit, Yurk. Bears in the look ahead were about a 7-point dog. Line open in Vegas going into Week 6. Bears catching 6, down to about 5.5 now. So there's been a little bit of a backing there to the Bears.
Pushback for the Bears.
They're a much better play in this spot as nearly a touchdown underdog. When you get in the 5, 5.5 range, those are kind of dead zones, I always say. I don't like playing those lines one way or another, but we'll see. As that game moves on and how much it moves between now and the end of the week, don't forget Todd Furman at 11:30 this Friday to go around Week 7 in the NFL with us. But the last thing the Bears need is a motivated Aaron Donald. Now, I think he's always motivated. He's the best defensive player in the league, and he has been for some time. But Aaron Donald was a guest on NFL Live yesterday. I don't know what they're trying to do to us at ESPN, but listen to this.
Yeah, we're just trying to keep you humble and hungry here on NFL Live, so you may not realize this, but you're going to face the Bears and Nick Foles on Monday Night Football. You've never sacked him, and you've played him 3 times. Do you keep tabs on these guys that you sack? And if that's the case, like, why haven't you sacked Nick Foles yet?
No, I don't know. I just ain't get to him yet. I got to find a way, though. But, I'm going to go out there and play. I'm a study, and hopefully I get them opportunities, and I get to them this time. So we're gonna see. Thanks for the motivation too.
There
by the way.
You go.
Thanks a lot. I mean,
I hope he forgot about the conversation the minute he had it. But why would you want to do that?
Thanks a lot.
I mean, what are you doing?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to forget it. He's like, hey, thanks for the motivation. I've never sacked Nick Foles. How has he never sacked Nick Foles? Nick Foles, the guy who can't run? I'm coming this
week. And he's lining up against the Plotter. I wonder if the Plotters played him in the past. He was at Seattle.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Emfetti.
Oh, yeah. They played? Sure, they were in the same division.
That's what I'm saying. I'd like to go back and take a look at those games.
Did Emfetti play mostly tackle last year for them? He did. Yes, he played mostly right tackle. Well, right? I think he was on the right side for Seattle.
He was drafted as left, I believe.
He was. I don't think it didn't work out. They put him at right. Now he's playing guard. What
you know, if they find a weakness on an offensive line, you know, the players are arguing on the sideline who gets a chance to rush against them. I mean, literally, it's like a seafood buffet. You want to line up on him, you want to get the king crab legs, you want to get the crab cakes, you want to get the jumbo shrimp. They're fighting to get
oysters,
over.
Yeah. The whole thing, right?
Reggie White told me the story in Green Bay when they I was in Green Bay with Reggie, but he was playing for Philadelphia at the time. They smacked around Troy Aikman his rookie year the first time they met him for 10 sacks.
Wow, that was
I remember that.
Wow.
10 sacks. Wow. Reggie White, Clyde Simmons, Jerome Brown, Mike Pitts.
Yes.
The time, everybody trying to argue to get over the guy that they thought was the weakness on that offensive line. Yeah. They just wanted 1 of 10. Give me some portion of those 10 sacks.
Well, was that the day that Simmons had 7 sacks? I think Clyde Simmons had 7
no,
sacks.
Sarah Thomas is the only guy that had 7 sacks.
But Simmons had a monster day one
Maybe
year. Clyde
4
Simmons.
And a half.
I think it was more than I'll check.
Well, let's look at his game
log. I'll look at his game log.
Yeah. And by the way,
it was 1989 because it was Troy Aikman's rookie year. They came back the second matchup. They didn't sack him once.
How many times has Aaron Donald actually played against Nick Foles?
Three times. She made the point. She goes, you've played him three times. You never sacked him.
This is number four.
I watched that. I said, what are you doing? Yeah. You're killing me. You're
this
killing
is
number
us.
Four. He's got 7.5 sacks already.
Clyde Simmons, by the way, underrated. Played here in
Clyde
Chicago.
Clyde Simmons was underrated.
Dick Geron. Geron had a ton of respect for him. But we did not make Clyde Simmons practice too hard.
Clyde, really?
Yeah, he was achy. He had played on that Philadelphia Veterans Stadium turf.
Oh, God, yeah.
And he was beat half to hell. And Coach Geron said, we're going to take care of Clyde. We're going to take care of Clyde, and we did.
Yurko nailed it. But, Yurk,
was
well, hold
wrong?
On. You said it was 80. You thought it was 89?
Yeah, it's 89 with
this
Trey.
This state has it in 91.
Okay.
It was they won at Dallas 24-0, and he had 4.5 sacks. You nailed it on the head. You said 4.5, didn't you?
Well, I said 4.5, but he said Clyde Simmons had a big game.
Okay. So he had 4.5 sacks.
I think the game specifically that they got him 10 times was his rookie campaign.
This says 91. I'm going to look up how many sacks they had that day.
He only was sacked 19 times his rookie year, so Troy Aikman.
Could have been 10 that day.
Yurk, it was 91. They had 10 sacks.
I got
it. It was Reggie, and you got all the guys.
Yeah.
Clyde Simmons had 4.5. Jerome Brown had 2.5. Mike Golick had 2. Pitts had 1. Reggie had 1.
They were paying attention to Reggie that day. Ron Heller did one hell of a job against Reggie. Remember Ron Heller, good old number 73?
Oh, God, yeah.
No, then they came back the next game then in 91 and checked the second game. They had 0 then. Had the wrong year. I apologize. My mistake.
By the way, they had 11 sacks, my friend.
Did they?
Yeah. They had 11 sacks that day. Boy, Troy Aikman had to be like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, he got beat half to hell.
So now Aaron Donald is a little extra motivated. He's something, though, man. Yurko called that one from the get-go, watching tape on Aaron Donald coming out of Pitt, and the Bears were in about a position that we knew he could potentially be available that year. Remember,
and the Bears jumped up and got him.
I think they were picking 14th. Weren't the Bears picking 14th? That's the year they selected Kyle Fuller. And Aaron Donald went off the board right before the Bears picked. And Phil Emery did like him, we learned later. But Yurko was specifically watching tape on Aaron Donald because people thought, you know, he could be a possibility for the Bears. And Yurko called it from the get-go. He said, this guy is a monster.
And they go, Yurk, why?
Right.
They go, Yurk, why? I say, he doesn't stay blocked. He doesn't like to get tied up. And he's got the moves to untie himself from an offensive lineman. He could work right. He could work left. He could run a rip. He could swim over the top. For a short guy to swim over the top, and Aaron Donald's not huge by any stretch of the imagination, but you've got to be able to turn your shoulders, be flexible enough, and pop that arm over real quick. And he's got a tremendous amount of strength in that body. He does kind of remind you a little bit of a John Randall.
Jeez.
But not as loud. Because John Randall was loud and talking and talking smack all the time. There are two kids in that draft. It was Aaron Donald and Tim Jernigan that I thought were two legitimate defensive tackles that could become stars. The rest of that defensive line, you might have some solid pros. And if you look through it, the third guy taken was a kid out of Oklahoma, I believe, went down to Atlanta. And I think he's a solid
Jordan
player.
Phillips, right?
Yeah, I think it's something like that. Solid player. But I don't think he's ever become a stud, you know. And then everybody else after that, you could have solid professionals in there. I consider myself a solid professional. The Goose, a solid professional, played for an extended period of time. John Randall was special. Aaron Donald is special. I thought Jernigan could have been special, but he got caught up with something in Baltimore. I don't know what happened to him in Baltimore, but I thought he could have been something special. But he was a pure nose tackle, too. Not so much of a wide three defensive tackle, and the wide threes are the guys that rush the passer very well.
Yurko could put on the tape and see what he sees. You wonder how some other executives that do this for a living or decision makers can't see that, and why a player like Aaron Donald, not that he was drafted in the third round, I mean, he's the 13th player taken, but when you look at guys like Greg Robinson or Blake Bortles or even Sammy Watkins, who's a fine player, but I mean, like, how do these guys, and is it just because teams start drafting for need? I mean,
well, but I remember it specifically. They get obsessed with the measurables, and he was 6'1".
But Yurko can look at that tape and go, holy cow.
But he's right.
This guy,
you know, Cortez Kennedy was 6'3.5", 6'4". That's a big size body. You look at John Henderson and Marcus Stroud that played for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Sure.
Two monsters.
Monster.
John
Henderson
was a monster. Two best defensive tackles that ever played for the Jacksonville Jaguars all at the same time. Gary Walker would be a close third in that group, and he came from Tennessee, from the Titans. But I think the point is bigger players.
Yeah.
Bigger players. It's hard to gamble on a guy who's 6'1" unless you truly believe in him.
I mean, it's unbelievable. That draft, by the way, 14, was incredible.
Yeah.
Khalil Mack was fifth. Jake Matthews, Mike Evans, Anthony Barr, who's terrific, hurt this year. Taylor Lewan, who's terrific. Unfortunately, he just got hurt, too. Odell Beckham, Fuller, Zach Martin, D. Ford, Ha-Ha, who's a nice player, Jimmy Ward, Teddy Bridgewater, DeMarcus Lawrence, and Joel Bitonio early in the second round. Like, that draft was phenomenal.
Here's the mistake I made. I didn't think Mike Evans was going to be a star.
Yeah, Mike Evans was a star. Yeah, again, you made a mistake on that one. That's
I made
true.
A mistake on that.
You
I
mean, said he was boom or bust.
Right.
I'll give you credit. You did. You said that. Boom or bust here.
Boom or bust.
He boomed.
I thought he was... everything was going to have to be competitive in a jump ball form is what I thought. I thought he was going to be another version of Alshon Jeffrey.
Yeah, remember we discussed this
better,
a lot. He's better.
And he's better than Alshon Jeffrey.
You said you were right.
I said he was boom or bust, I thought he was going to be a bust, and so I was wrong. I can say it,
but
I was wrong on it because I did not think he was going to become a player.
At the very least, you did say, I remember it specifically because I kind of liked him. I liked those offenses, and you said he's either going to be awesome or he's going to stink. That's what you said.
So I hedged awesome. My bet verbally to allow myself a little bit of a net to land in if I fell off the trapeze.
Here's something to think about. In their prime, J.J. Watt or Aaron Donald?
I'd probably still go Watt, but man.
Oh, I disagree.
You disagree?
God, you know, in his prime, J.J. Watt was dangerous.
I mean, J.J. Watt was ragged. I mean, J.J. Watt's got 220 sack seasons.
Player of the year, too. Yeah.
I mean, he's got two.
He does, but
J.J. Watt is a fraction of his former self.
Yeah. No, you're right.
It's a tough call. I mean, like, what do you want more? In your face pressure, like up the middle? Do you want Watt coming off the edge?
I will tell you this. You know what's harder to find? Interior pass rusher.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's harder to find.
That's a good question.
And it's not as easy to rush the passer from the middle. Reggie White hated it.
Yeah.
They moved Reggie inside to rush, and I'm telling you, he'd go back to the sidelines, and he'd be MF Ray Rhodes. And he wouldn't F, though, right?
Yeah,
he wouldn't say F. Yeah, he'd use another term that wasn't
God bless you, Ray.
As bad, yeah.
and
Ray Rhodes, and same thing with Fritz Schirmer. Fritz knew that if you utilized him in the middle and put Bryce Pop on the outside, you've got a better team.
Yes.
Didn't matter. Reggie wanted to be outside.
Carm, you said, I mean, look, Aaron Donald has a 20.5 sack season on his resume, and he's got 7.5 this year in 6 games.
He could get to another one. That's a good question. That might be a coin flip, boys.
I disagree. I'm taking Aaron Donald all day long.
Let's get our guy from Indianapolis on, the gold jacket, the Hall of Famer on.
Jeez, J.J. Watt, man.
He was really good. Was J.J. Watt, like, outside of Mahomes, and it's only because of the position he plays, I think Aaron Donald is unquestionably considered, if you remove Mahomes.
Oh, I think the two of them are the best players. Like, I would agree with you.
Like, was J.J. Watt ever?
Yes, absolutely, Meller. You're forgetting.
I'm not forgetting. He was great.
Who else would you be above him at the time then? I mean, that's what you've got to take a look at. He does have a Defensive Player of the Year award.
He's got three of them.
So, I mean.
J.J. had average annual value seasons of 19, 16, 22, and 21.
I know, but those Texans defenses, too, were good. But were they ever considered great?
Well, is the Rams defense great? He's great.
Right. The individual's
the
great.
The three best players in the league right now are Donald, Russell Wilson, and Patrick Mahomes.
I thought you were
going
to say Claypool.
No, stop it. Those are the three best players in the league right now.
Where's DeAndre Hopkins?
We're way late. Right. We're having too much
you're
fun
late.
Talking football.
You're the
I know. 3-1-2.
So greedy.
3-3-2-3-7-7-6. We'll be right back.
This is Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000.
See what we're up to.
See them on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Sports debates. What do you want, Aaron Donald or J.J. Watt in their prime? J.J. Watt's four-year dominant run, 64 games, 69 sacks. It's a lot of sacks. It's over a sack a game. Nice. Meller. Was that Meller or was that Merkin?
No, that was me.
Meller just goes, nice. I don't know. Flip a coin for those two. The Bears have to deal with still dominant Aaron Donald this weekend. That much I do know, boys. You better block him. You better be ready. Cody Whitehair, Rashawn Coward. Jermaine Ifedi.
Oh, they're coming.
Hey, you better be ready, boys.
Is this the Leonard Floyd revenge game?
Oh, please. If they let Leonard Floyd wreck the game, I mean, God. And then, I heard Weeder this morning with Cap and with Hoodie. And, it's like you bang your head into the wall trying to figure out this offense. You know, were they right to throw the ball on third down and two because Nagy knows they can't get 2 yards on the ground? Or do you have to try it anyway? Do you want your coach to be aggressive?
He will be rushing against the human turnstile, Charles Leno. I mean, he might as well just take a ticket on the way to the quarterback. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
I don't know what the Bears' offense does well, and we can nitpick a lot of things and a lot of decision-making. Should Matt Nagy run it here? Should he throw it there?
They're scoring touchdowns
in the red
zone. If
they can do anything well.
You're asking me what they do well. Yeah, when they get to the red zone, they do put the ball in the end zone this year.
They're still 26th in red zone percentage. Yeah. They're 26th. I got a side-by-side. I'll do it right after
maybe
11.
It feels good.
Actually, no, we got Shulman at 11. Maybe I could do a little bit of it right now because we're going to talk to Dan Shulman coming up. Here, updated DVOA rankings, first of all, through week six.
Through week six now.
Bears are fifth in defensive DVOA.
Nice.
Fifth, all right? They're 14th overall. Here's the Bears' D. We'll do a little side-by-side comparison.
Let's do it.
Here's the Bears' D. Yard per play, fifth best in the NFL.
Five.
Completion percentage by the opposing quarterback. Best in the NFL. You know, the Bears defense is the best. It's the lowest.
Number one.
Yards per attempt by the opposing quarterback. Bears are the third best.
Top five.
Quarterback rating, second best. Points per game, seventh best. Red zone defense, number one in the NFL. Third down defense, number two in the NFL. The worst ranking in there I gave you, you had one outside the top five. That's points per game where they're seventh. They're giving up about 19 and a half points a game. Bears offense, same statistics. Yard per play, 27th. Completion percentage, 26th. Yards per attempt, 30th. Only two teams worse. Quarterback rating. Quarterback rating, 26th. Points per game, 27th. Red zone percentage, 26th. Third down percentage, they were much better on Sunday. They were half, at least half, 50%. 27th in the NFL. It's the exact opposite.
Yes.
They're top five in everything defense. They're bottom five in everything offensively. It's the same old story. I don't know what they do well. Does anybody? Does Matt Nagy have a clue? Does this offense do anything well? Is there a single piece on that offensive line that you feel like is a true building block? No, no,
nope.
No,
no.
Is Anthony Miller the wide receiver everybody thought? No.
He has not developed the way he should have developed. No.
Remember what a brilliant move it was for Ryan Pace to trade up to get Anthony Miller? Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Remember that on draft day? Yeah. I'm talking a Gridiron Assassin, too, who I love.
You do love the Gridiron
Assassin.
Remember
that nonsense?
Yeah.
What a brilliant move by Ryan Pace.
The kid from Memphis.
To go up and get Anthony Miller. Really? Was it so brilliant to trade draft capital to go up and get Anthony Miller?
Yeah.
It's not pick on Anthony Miller Day. That's not what this
and
is about.
And it's not pick don't on tell Gridiron me about, Assassin Day
and
either.
It's not, don't tell me about the brilliant moves on draft day. Tell me 3 years from now. Don't try to be, you know.
You're
what I
more
mean?
Excited like, about number 11, Moody.
Yeah.
Than you are about Anthony
and
Miller.
2 years
right
ago,
now.
We could be saying that's a bust out, too. Right. I don't know. But they don't do anything well on offense. And that's the problem. More on this coming up. 312-332-3776. We'll recap game one of the World Series last night. Look ahead at game two tonight with the man on the call here on ESPN 1000 and ESPN Radio. It's going to be Dan Shulman. He'll join us when we return in 2 minutes.